I'm really, really excited about Isaiah and woo! And the continuing of Route 66. I'm not going to lie, my head hurts because I've been reading and studying Isaiah. And I think it says that if you really do study Isaiah, your head's a little bit scrambled because there is just a lot in it. So, my head hurts, but I'm excited about giving you this word this morning. Now, I'm going to try and unpack it for you, but it does come with a warning sign. Just so I've warned you, because over the past few weeks and probably over a month, it has really, really challenged me. So I just want you to have your hearts open, your ears open, to receive what God is going to say through us this morning through Isaiah. What I am loving about this book, especially if you read on and you keep reading chapters after chapters, the faithfulness of God is just amazing. Not just to the people who love him, but just to the people who rejected him. And there were so many people who rejected him, but his faithfulness was just so strong. So we're going to hear God speak through Isaiah, one of the greatest prophets that ever lived. So in Isaiah's ministry spanned, he reigned, there was five kings. It was King Uzziah, King Jotham, King Ahaz, and King Hezekiah. But we are going to concentrate on one king this morning. And I'm really sorry, he's not a great king. In fact, he is like the worst king of Judah, of the history of Judah that we know. And this is because it says here, I'm just give you a little snippet of who we're talking about. And it says in 2 Chronicles 28, 1 to 4, Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king. He reigned in Jerusalem 16 years. Unlike David, his father, he did not do what was right in the eyes of the Lord. He walked in the ways of the kings of Israel and also made cast idols for worshipping the Baals. He burned sacrifices in the valley of Ben-Hinnom and sacrificed his sons in the fire. Following this detestable ways of the nations the Lord had driven out before the Israelites, he offered sacrifices and burnt incense at the high places, on the hilltops and under every spreading tree. So within these just few verses, we are introduced to this king. We are taken straight into the depths of his unfaithfulness. He was a nasty piece of work. Yet God is going to speak through Isaiah words of mercy and patience and kindness and love and so on and so on. So I would love to share with you three things that I have learned about this chapter. Are we listening to God? So if you want to turn to me, we're going to start reading Isaiah 7. We probably won't get through it all, so we're just going to read a few verses. And we're going to start off reading Isaiah 7, 1 to 9. When Ahaz, son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king of Judah, king of Rezin, of Aram, and Pekah, son of Ramaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem, but they could not overpower it. Now the house of David, or in other words known as Davidic the government, was told, Aram has allied itself with Ephraim, that is Israel. So the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken as trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. So let's just pause here for a minute. So you had King Ahaz and the southern tribe of Judah have learnt that King Pekah and King Rezin, they are going to be attacking from the north, according like this massive army that King Ahaz is thinking that is just coming towards them. So notice, it's not just King Ahaz's people that are shaken, it's King Ahaz, the leader, that is shaken as well. They were so scared that they were shaking like trees of the sheer terror of these massive armies King Ahaz thought that was going to be coming. They were sickened with fear. They were not sleeping for fear. What armies are we facing in our life that are causing us to fear, causing us to be really sickened with fear, and sometimes not sleeping and wrestling and just not sleeping very well because we're caught up in our fear? It might not be as severe as King Ahaz, but it is causing us to fear. Let us read on. Chapter 3 says, "Then the Lord said to Isaiah, 'Go out, you and your son, Shear Jashub,' which means 'the remnant will return.' Then the Lord said to Isaiah, 'Go out and your son of Shear Jashub to meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool on the road of the laundress field. Say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid.'" I love this verse. Be careful, be calm, and don't be afraid. God is saying, I've got this. I've got this. You don't need to be scared about this army. I've got this. And if you're in a place of fear this morning, God is talking to you as well. He's got it. He's got this. And oh, when I read these verses, I am so glad that I am a Christian this morning, that I'm a follower of Jesus, to know that he has got it. He has got all of our stuff, all of our worries, all of our thoughts. He's got everything. He's got it. Be calm, be careful, don't be afraid. Just be quiet. Just be quiet. Let's move on to verse 4. "Do not lose heart because of these two smoldering stubs of firewood." So in other words, the Lord is saying these armies are not producing much heat. They're not going to come to much. The prophet's sign to Ahaz could not have been clearer from God. Let's keep reading. "Because of fierce anger of Rezin and Aram and of the son of Ramaliah, Aram, Ephraim, the Ramaliah son, have plotted your ruin, saying, 'Let us invade Judah. Let us tear it apart and divide it among ourselves and make the son of Tabeel king over it.' Yet this is what the sovereign Lord says. It will not take place. It will not happen." Again, a sign from God. It's not going to happen. It's not going to take place. So do you think King Ahaz listened? No, he didn't. He was fearing the worst. Instead of listening to God, he was fearing the worst. These are God's words. They're not Isaiah's. And King Ahaz knows that. Isaiah is one of God's people. But he still doesn't listen. He couldn't have been more direct in these verses, time and time in these signs. So the Lord is still speaking in verse 8. "For the head of Aram is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is only Rezin, just a mere man. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people." In other words, it will be like rubble. There's nothing going to be left. "The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is only Ramaliah's son." Oh, this is brilliant. You need to write this down. "If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all." And it says in the message, if you don't take your stand in faith, you won't have a leg to stand on. Boom. And there it is. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. Come on. If we are followers of Jesus, if we claim to be Christians, we need to stand firm in our faith. When we're singing these songs on a Sunday morning about, oh, we trust you, God. Do we? Do we really do that? Because what happens when we walk out of church and we go into our workplaces and we hear stuff and we start worrying? Are we listening to God? Or are we just caught up thinking about what will happen? What might happen? What if? What if? Oh, but what about that? And what about if the money doesn't come in? And what if? And so on. Instead of just listening to God. It will not take place. It will not happen. Be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Because the likelihood is, the things that you're thinking that's going to happen, it's not going to happen. It's not. Because our trust in God. I know God is saying that to Ahaz. But is he saying this to you this morning? Are we listening to God? Are we trusting in God? So let's continue to read chapter 7. We're on verse 10 now. Everybody with me still? Later the Lord sent the message to King Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign of confirmation. Ahaz, make it as difficult as you want, as high as the heavens and as deep as the place of the dead. But the king refused. No, he said, I will not test the Lord like that. Then Isaiah said, listen well, you royal family of David. Isn't enough to exhaust human patience? Must you exhaust the patience of my God as well? I think Ahaz a little bit ticked off, do you not think? I think he's slightly annoyed at this point. It's almost like it says in the message that God says, be extravagant. King Ahaz, be extravagant. Ask for the moon. Ask for a sign. Oh my goodness. Could you imagine God saying that to us? Just ask for anything. God was so desperate for him to hear his voice and wanted him to reach out in faith to him. But the king still said no. He still refused. What? I just think, what on earth? Oh, holy Ahaz. Oh, how I couldn't test the Lord like this. Oh no, how I could, I couldn't ask such things. I don't want to bother the king, the God. How could I ask such things? And God sees straight through his false piety of faith and recognizes that Ahaz is afraid that a sign might force him to believe and repent of his sin. Ahaz actually wants to remain blind to all of what God is doing. This could be speaking to you this morning. Are we not hearing? Are we not trusting? Are we afraid to ask for that sign? Because we know if we ask for that sign, we've got to believe. Are we afraid to ask for that sign? Because we know there's something in our life that we actually might have to give up. And we really don't want to because we kind of like it. Are we living in complete submission and surrenderance to God? Because if we're followers of Jesus, if we are Christians, we need to be. We need to be in complete, and I'm talking to myself here, we need to be in complete submission and surrenderance to God. If there's stuff in your life that is not of God, you need to get rid of it. And God wants it. God's like, give it to me. I've got it. And also, I think at this point, King Ahaz has probably already decided to make an alliance with the Assyria, King Assyria, to help against the Syrian Israelites. And you can read more about that in 2 Kings 16:7. And more about how he made his alliance with King Assyria. He did not want to risk his kingdom on a God he couldn't see. But instead, he trusted in Assyria that would spell doom for all of the northern kingdom. Isaiah struggled with standing on Isaiah's words, and appealing to the Assyria illustrates, I think, one life's most significant areas of tension. God's promises versus earthly circumstances. In the end, Ahaz lacked the faith to trust in God's promise, and instead he appealed to Assyria for rescue. Bad choice. Who do we turn to in our rescue? Who is the first point of call do we turn to in our rescue? Throughout the ages, God has called people to believe in his promises over and against all our earthly circumstances. we read a great example. Ignore the picture. It's a funny picture, but they were old. Abraham and Sarah is another great... At least this will kind of keep in your head, all these visual learners out there. God's promises and earthly circumstances, Abraham and Sarah was a great example of this. So, their situation, Abraham and Sarah wait for a descendant. God's promise. God will make Abraham a great nation and give him a son by Sarah. But then the earthly circumstances, the world see it, like we would see it. Abraham and Sarah, are they not already like 75 and 65 years old? Kind of don't mean to be funny, because then actually that promise isn't then going to be revealed for another 24 years' time. So will that not make Sarah like over 90? Well, I'm sorry, but if I went home to Worcester, I went to visit my grandma, and she went, "Hey, Katie, never guess what, I'm pregnant." I'll be like, right. Just right. Bit weird, bit funny, my grandma pregnant at 93. Wow. But it came true, because it's God's promise. It came true. I'm still really laughing about my grandma pregnant, but anyway, right, let's just not think about that. What's going on in your life at the moment? What earthly circumstances are you facing? Who are you surrounding yourself with? Who are you looking up to? Who are you trusting? Have you got an Isaiah in your life that encourages you to trust in God when life gets hard rather than look to the earthly circumstances? So even though Ahaz had said no, God in his grace reached out in a special way to the struggling king of Judah. God is not leaving him alone. He is still going to give him signs. And you'll read them through Isaiah. And that is a picture for us today. It doesn't matter how much we say no to God. It doesn't matter how much we do not want to trust in God. It doesn't matter how much we want to run away from God. God's not leaving you. God is right here beside us. So are we living in hope? So let's read verse 14. One of the most famous prophecies ever. I love these verses. They kind of, you know, caused my head to hurt a little bit, but I did love these verses. All right then, the Lord himself will give you the sign. Look, the virgin will conceive a child. She will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. By the time this child is old enough to choose what is right and reject what is wrong, he will be eating yogurt and honey. For before the child is that old, the lands of the two kings you fear so much will both be deserted. Then the Lord will bring things on you, your nation and your family, and like anything since Israel broke away from Judah, he will bring the king of Assyria upon you. Hang on a minute. I thought King Ahaz made alliances with the king of Assyria. So how come King Assyria is now going to come and attack Judah? Bad choice. So these verses have caused a lot of discussions between Christians on what it is and prophecies and things. Is it one prophecy? Is it a double prophecy? Is it a dual prophecy? Did Isaiah's wife die? So Isaiah got remarried and had a son with his new wife called a great name, Mahalashelahuzbaz. Wow. Yes, I got that right, I think. Could you imagine calling your son this name today? Could you imagine in the playground, Mahalashelahuzbaz, have you got your lunchbox? Wow. Anyway. Because how can this prophecy that didn't get fulfilled for another 750 years, as we read in Matthew, help King Ahaz and the people of Judah during this terrible time? I think there is two parts of this prophecy. And when I started looking into it, The Bible talks about it, and it's called a near far fulfillment or a midrash. And my interpretation and my view of these verses is there was a double fulfillment happening, one for Isaiah and King Ahaz's time, and one for over 750 years time for us. Yay! And we read that in Isaiah 17. So the near prophecy is revealed in Isaiah 8, 3 to 4. Write that down. Then I made love to the prophetess, that is Isaiah's wife. And she conceived and gave birth to a son. And the Lord said to me, name him Mahalalelahasbaz, for before the boy knows to say my father or my mother, the wealth of Damascus and the plunder of Samaria will be carried off by the king of Assyria. So let's just recap on what Isaiah 7:14 says about that passage. And there is aspects of that that we read in Isaiah 8:1-4. And especially when it comes down to verse 17 in Isaiah 14:17, where it says, then the Lord will bring things on you, your nation and your family, and like anything since Israel broke away from Judah, he will bring the king of Assyria upon you. And we read what it said in Isaiah 8, the last bit, the wealth of Damascus and the plunder of Samaria will be carried off by the king of Assyria. It's coming true. And you really need to read and read about it because there is just so much in there. And I've not got time to unpack it this morning, but there is so much in there. And then we read about the far prophecy where a long, long time has passed, over 700 years or so ago. We read in Matthew, and we all know it. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus. For he will save his people from their sins. All this took place to fulfill what the Lord has spoken by the prophet Isaiah way back 700 years ago. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which means God is with us. Wow. Is that not exciting? Please smile at me and say, yes, it's exciting. Come on. So initial fulfillment, the one that has aspects of the prophecy in it, Isaiah's son born in Ahaz's day, Mahalalelahasbaz, was a sign from God to King Ahaz that God is with them. And then the complete ultimate fulfillment, the birth of Jesus Christ, Emmanuel. God is with us. Yes, Bill, hallelujah. But he still says no. He still refuses the signs, even though he has seen Isaiah and his wife give birth. Even though he sees all of this stuff, he still says no. But God knew he was going to refuse, but wanted him to know, I am not giving up on you. I am still with you. He got himself in a whole lot of trouble. Why? Because he ignored the signs from God. Why? Because he didn't trust God. Why? He had no hope in God. And unfortunately, he reaped what he had sown. And there would be a price tag on the king's refusal to read the signs. Because he preferred to steal treasures from God's temple and do the most ungodliest things, the nation would endure an Assyrian invasion far more violent than the present one. That's not God's fault. That is King Ahaz's fault. But God is merciful. That's why he kept giving him these signs. Are we doing God's way or are we going my way or your way? We reap what we sow, and there is no point blaming God if there is something in our lives that you have done that is wrong, that has been sinful, and you are living with those consequences. What are you sowing this morning? What are you sowing this morning? What are you choosing to do your way and not God's way? Just as an example, so everybody kind of gets the whole what we sow, we reap, and just to get the whole kind of sometimes it's not God's fault, it's our choices. So this is just a complete example. Say if we go and have too much to drink one night and we end up driving the car and we knock somebody over and afterwards we're really, really sorry and we repent to God. But hey, you've still got to go to prison. Because you still have to face those consequences. That's not God's fault. That is your fault. So I think it's just better just to be good. And, you know, don't do any of that. Because unfortunately, we do reap what we sow. And if only Ahaz had picked up that challenge at this point. Who can say how his own story and the story of his nation might have been different? If I can just invite the worship team up, that'd be great. If everybody could just stand to their feet. If you can, that would be great. Where's your life story at? Are we listening to God or are we ignoring God? Are we trusting in God or are we not? Are we full of hope or hopelessness? Who do we look to when those challenges and those disasters strike in our family? Who do we look up to when our challenges and strike in our workplace? Who do we look up to when our challenges, disaster strike in our marriage, if you're married? Who do you look up to when challenges and disasters strike in our church, our nation? So obviously this week, the whole Trump thing, politics, you know, how have we reacted? How have we reacted to that? Have we reacted in a godly way? Or have we acted in an ungodly way and seen the earthly circumstances? And God is saying, this is what, you know, I kind of learned from reading this chapter. God is just saying, just come to me. Just close your eyes now. Reach out your hands. God is saying, just come to me. Just come to me. I am all you need. I am all you need. You don't need the stuff. You don't need it. Let's not be a King Ahaz and think we know what's best. Let's start living like a child of God. And go to our Father, not just when disaster strikes. Just go to him. Just talk to him. Have a relationship with him. This is why he brought Jesus on earth. So we can have a relationship with God. So God can say to us, hey, I've got this. Hey, I've got your stuff. Don't ignore him. Because he is always speaking. But are we always listening? Don't go away from here feeling heavy. Please, please have somebody to pray with you this morning. If there is stuff that you just need to talk about, if there's stuff that you just need to let go, please come and talk to somebody. Don't leave here this morning without speaking to somebody. Thank you.